This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
Did your internet go out?
Karina Anglada.
That's a questionable pullover.
And Darius Thomas.
I got caught up in my cable here.
Personal branding. No matter where you go or where you look, that's now the name of the game to get yourself out there. But everyone has a different approach to it. Rob Villanueva, Senior Manager of Athlete Relations and Marketing at the Players Tribune, gives his take on a successful strategy and approach to building your personal brand, even without the trends.
Brock, do the countdown here for us.
So let's clap on 18 here.
Cool.
That was a super late one. I should have picked a number that was earlier. That was extremely long.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today. Welcome back to this episode of Creative Sports Podcast. Excited to have Rob Villanueva here with us from the Players Tribune. And we're going to be talking a lot about personal branding. So, Rob, thanks so much for hopping on and joining us today.
No doubt. I appreciate you. This team is stacked, by the way. So kudos to the whole teamwork makes the dream work.
Love it. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. I wanted to start with a tweet that you have pinned at the top of your Twitter that says, "My mission is to creatively shift mindsets and challenge the status quo by planting seeds of growth mindset." And you talk a lot about growing your brand. So I think that's a great place to start. From following you and seeing all your posts, you're very much about growth mindset and sowing your seeds, so to speak. So can you give us a little background on how you got started down this path?
I started out in 1977, coming out of my mom's womb. And then we fast forward. I got into like my first working experience in the world of needing money to pay bills. It was when I was just straight out of high school. And I was in love with technology, everything tech. Got a job offer from AOL back in the early 90s. I'm dating myself. So I had the opportunity to move from New York City to California. And I just took the leap of faith and just went over there. Spent about 15 years as a network engineer working for multiple different companies. To fast forward, my brother at the time was getting a lot of hype, being a high school phenom, McDonald's All-American. And eventually ended up making it to the NBA, which was Charlie Villanueva. And I quickly shifted from tech to the world of sports and first started out in management, working at Excel Sports and the team over there, which is one of the biggest agencies in the game today, and got into marketing. And now I'm in media working at the Players Tribune. And I say all that because, you know, going from a world from tech to sports, it was almost going from a world from New York City, East Coast to the West Coast and Silicon Valley. It was like two different worlds. And as I start going through my own journey, I started realizing the power of growth mindset. And it's growth mindset is how people believe that their basic abilities can develop through dedication and hard work. And it's a way to program the brain and take your talents to a whole new elevating point. The learning and the resilience of the concept of growth mindset, I started figuring out how that applied to me and the impact I wanted to have on the people that I was working with, from whether it's corporations or individual athletes or my own brothers and my other siblings, the circle around me. So I've adopted that as part of my mantra now. And I constantly say, grow your brand, because grow your brand is more of a metaphor of grow your life. And you can't have personal branding without being personal, right? It's like personal branding is being personal, is being who you are, is your authentic true self. And personal branding is essential to the practice of your own marketing for yourself. So if you're not working on yourself, then you're not working on your personal brand. So these are two worlds, whether it's work or life, that you have to find a balance in. but you have to prioritize yourself in order to start elevating what you consider yourself to be your personal brand. I know that all makes sense though, but I kind of was trying to tie the two with my own personal journey, because it is life. Personal branding is your life. A lot of people just think of it as a logo or as your Instagram profile or as a LinkedIn resume, but it's a lot more than that. It stands true to who you are, what makes you unique, what makes you relevant, what differentiates yourself that could be appealing to your ideal audience. But it's a true reflection on those values and strengths and passions that you have in your heart and soul.
You talked about after high school, like you wanted to go into tech, which was way different than tech is now. When was sort of the shift in your mindset to say, you know what, I really want to do this media stuff?
So media wasn't at first a draw to me, just because, like, working in tech, I worked for an internet service provider, and I was Cisco system certified, Juniper network certified. So I was more into the architect of networking and corporate networks and how they work, the security of networks as well. I was always passionate about sports, though. I played sports when I was in high school, played in the basketball team, did track and field, played in the baseball team. My parents are from the Dominican Republic, so baseball was required. And I also was tied in on the football team. So I was like an all-around loving sports and tech. So like in my nature, those two words existed, but they just didn't connect. And what helped was when my brother got drafted, right? You know, it's like when he got drafted, it's like the whole family got drafted. It's like we were thinking, oh, we're all rich. It didn't quite work out that way, right? Because he got the checks to his name, not me. So I had to figure out my role and how could I help play an asset to what he was building with his personal brand, but his personal career. And what was my, like, and naturally, like you would think, right? He's a big brother. You want the best interest for your younger brother, right? You want to send an example. So I took that to heart, and I started realizing as the digital media landscape was evolving from where I was at, you know, back in the 90s, it was like, we had like Black Planet, Mijente.com, MySpace. Then you start saying the words of Facebook and Twitter evolve. And I don't know if you guys remember, but Charlie actually participated in one of the most famous tweets. Was when he tweeted at halftime during the NBA game. This is before the NBA had all the social media policies in place. But he tweeted about in the middle of a game, or I should say not in the middle, but the halftime of the game in the locker room. And they were playing against, he was with the Bucks. They were playing against the Boston Celtics. They were down. So he tweeted, you know, coach wants to step it up. I need to step it up. Something like along those lines. And the tweet went viral because, first of all, they won the game and he stepped it up. I think he had 17 that night. But it started the conversation in an era that always protected the athlete and didn't revealed the curtains that was inside the locker room and what these guys are thinking. Like, you know, they would do halftime interviews all the time, right, during the middle of the game. But to tweet and to use technology as a way to broadcast a piece of message that touched millions, it was kind of crazy to think about. And, like, you know, we live looking at back then, which I think was in 2009, and looking at what the world of athlete fan community is like today, it's crazy to see that how evolved. But he was early on, and it was thanks to technology. You know, if Twitter didn't ever existed, he was never going to be able to reach hundreds of thousands of people. So it was like with me seeing technology, seeing the importance of management and a good team and marketing, and then media started just naturally playing a role in my mind, just because it's like, this is how you connect. It's one thing to think about distribution and what the receiving end or what the application is that is receiving this message, but media, like, this is a lot of power in media now. You know, media shifts religion, media shifts sports, media shifts politics. It started seeing the involvement and seeing the impact firsthand with him throughout his career, made me fall in love with it.
And speaking of evolving, right? Like there's so much there. But I do want to go back to your career. And you mentioned, you know, having a lot of different, going from tech and media, everything in between, and talking about the growth mindset. I'm curious, what was the most formative stop in terms of a job that you felt like you really grew the most in your role, like throughout your career? Like if you, like looking back, if you could pick one, is there a spot that was like most formative for you?
Yeah, I've had multiple roles, both in tech and in sports. The opportunity that I got with the Players Tribune was back in 2017. And one of the co-founders of the Players Tribune, her name is Jamie Mesler. And Jamie Mesler, she was the VP of marketing for Excel Sports. And she was a mentor of mine. She recruited me to start with the company. And I started a role in athlete relations. Being the in-between guy between a piece of content that gets published, a story, and an athlete that might be facing a challenge in their lives. And being that in-between connector was the most rewarding to me, because not only did I get to see these stories come to light, but the process of the storytelling was also rewarding along this journey. Because it's like, you know, most people may think, oh, you know, you do an interview, turn it around in 24, 48 hours, publish it, and that's it. Some of these pieces and some of the most compelling pieces that we've done took 6 months. There was one piece that took 2 years. And like, you're like, 2 years? You waited for a piece for 2 years? Back and forth, nurturing the relationships, being a support system, going through hard times, going through the hard times with them, and the good times, like that roller coaster sort of back and forth. It can be draining, but it's also rewarding, because like when you finally see the piece come to mind, you start realizing, oh, wow, the therapy was in the process. So that's where I truly believe that I this is one of the dream jobs for me, and one of the jobs that I've found the most growth, because I was able to see the multifaceted stories that took place throughout my time there. And it's now going on 7 years since I've been there, and I played pretty much the same role where it's athlete relations and marketing. But that right there is where I find my growth, and it was through other people's stories.
That's awesome. I love that.
Kind of talking about your role at the Players Tribune, you know, what's a typical, you know, day-to-day like for you, and what's like a step through of what the building those relationships looks like for you?
A day-to-day, I could give you an example for today, right? Like some of our stories at the Players Tribune are reactive to what's happening along the sports world, whether it's a big game, something crazy happened. But some of the best stories are the evergreen stories, the ones that you can't Google, the ones that, you know, like, you know about it, you hear about it, but you don't know the true story until you hear it from the source's mouth. And tapping in to the stories that's going into the sports world, like when I'm tapping in through Twitter, or now formerly known as Twitter, now X, or tapping in through outside of social media, tapping into the actual reps, the athlete reps. And athletes have multiple reps, right? It could be their actual agents, which a lot of the agents, some of them are hands-on a regular basis, but a lot of them are just come in and out when the big contracts are there to sign. So they have somebody else in that role that's more of their day-to-day, whether it's a manager, a personal manager, whether it's someone in their agencies that's doing PR, marketing, that talks to the athletes regularly, that I can develop a relationship with organically, whether we bump into each other at All-Star Weekend, or I see them at Super Bowl, we go have drinks, just natural people-to-people connection. You want to work with people that have good hearts. And like one of the things we say at Players Tribune, you know, not everyone, even though everyone has a story, but not everyone could deliver a story because of timing, of the circle that they have in place. So there's a lot of dots that have to connect and align in order to have that right delivery. But it's like one of those things where it's not about being at the right place for the right time. It's about knowing what you think is generally in your heart. And I take the DNA of my own brother, right? Throughout his 11-year career, I was his right-hand man. I was always looking out for his best interests. And that's the same DNA that we've installed with how we do athlete relations at the Players Tribune. It's like we put the athlete first, literally. Like we've done so many pieces that we spend hours and hours on the phone with or in person with that don't see the time of day because the athlete wasn't ready. And they went through the process. We asked the questions about whatever particular topic. And then when it was ready to hit that publish button. They were like, you know what? I changed my mind. And it sucks, you know, because you put in all those resources, but we understand that because they're human beings. And we had situations where like we put out a story and then they felt the aftermath and it could affect them positively, where it was rewarding. Oh my God, I've impacted so many people. Or at the same time, it reacted in a negative way where it's like, oh, I'm now getting all this hate because, you know, I came out the closet, so to speak. So it's challenging. That's one of the most challenging parts. But it's another element of personal branding, but as long as we take an authentic role to how we are connecting and what our intentions is, that it's not about headlines, it's not about clickbaits, it's not about trying to land the big story. It's about really empowering people. And if I like to look at it as like, if I can give you a pen that can do magic, you know, what does that look like? Or if I can make you the director of your own movie, what does that look like? So it's a different approach with us. And that's why sometimes it's, especially in digital media today, it's such a fast paced world where like, you know, all right, you know, how do we generate, you know, 500,000 views in our traffic towards our website. And if we're not hitting those numbers, then it's like, do we do something more, you know, attractive that drives traffic? And as long as we find the balance between KPIs and impact and these sort of evergreen stories, I think, you know, we'll continue to maintain a sustainable business. And so far, you know, next year we'll celebrate 10 years. And it's been true to the art of journalism and storytelling.
You all have done a lot of like on time stories, whether it's a person just won the World Series or the Super Bowl or, you know, a big game and they have this letter. Can I talk about the value of delivering at the right time?
It's key. I'll give you an example of good timing and bad timing, because like we recently did our Adam Wainwright piece, which everyone in baseball loves him. And he had this big retirement ceremony that the piece was originally supposed to go out during that weekend of his retirement ceremony. It was like he had a bunch of stuff planned and he had too much going on. Whereas like we had to hold off on the piece and try to catch him on another part, on like post-math of like, now he's retired. Now he could have his head settle and really dive in on what this means. Because sometimes you get caught up in the moment where you're getting all this attention that you don't really have time to sit down what just really took place. Like you spend your entire life playing a sport, building it, and getting to a place where you're now a professional superstar. And now that comes to an end. And to get that time to reflect, we ended up posting his letter about 2 weeks after his announcement. Oh, actually, it was longer than that. It was after the World Series, actually. So that's a piece that we would have loved to have in the moment, because you can get now earned media because his name's, you know, being talked about, and a bigger network could potentially grab a soundbite or a piece or a quote that can give it more amplification. But we did it afterwards, and now baseball, you know, sometimes with baseball, when it's over, it's over, and everyone moves on to the next sport. So it's a piece that still performed well because of who it was and the story that it was. Could it have performed better? Yeah, it probably could have done double the numbers if we did it during the time he was actually retiring. But the numbers were still good, and it wasn't about the numbers, which just goes back to what I was saying. Like, here's an opportunity to do a story with Adam, a real person, good people. And this is something that his grandchildren can read, you know, 10, 15 years from now and really have an impact. That's the gift that keeps on giving.
That leads me to another question, because you've shared so many incredible thoughts there. And I'm curious, what advice do you have for listeners in like concrete advice for balancing, hitting those KPIs, hitting those numbers, but also remembering the long-term impact and not almost like relying too much on metrics? Because I think that's what a lot of us are focused on in our, whether it's our personal Instagram, like, oh, I got this many likes, or for the work that we do, it's like, oh, what, you know, numbers did I hit this quarter? What are some tips that you have for balancing, you know, not focusing too much on the numbers, but also keeping those long-term goals in mind?
Yeah. And we're on the topic of personal branding, right? So it's like personal branding should complement, not detract from one's responsibility. And what I mean by that, I think authenticity, you hear that word all the time. It feels like a buzzword now, but being true to oneself, which naturally entails finding balance between personal expressions and professional conduct. When you stay true to yourself, you stay true to the story. And these vanity numbers, and it's like we're all guilty of it, you know, whether it's likes or whatever KPI, you know, they're all vanity numbers. They're not like, they're real in a sense where when you want it to translate to, you want to monetize, or you're trying to build the business around it. So I get that part. If you're trying to have a sustainable business to maintain the lights on. So, you know, if you're working with advertisers, those are the numbers they want to see. They want to see, have the most reach, the most engagement. What's your growth rate like? But as a personal brand, you know, you, your own business. And I think as long as you remain consistent, because personal branding, we all know it is a marathon, not a sprint. So if you stay consistent, not just in your appearance, but in your values and your actions and the way you engage the world, when your brand aligns with your true self, it always resonates more deeply with others, and how you're building trust and how you're looking to establish a stronger, more meaningful connection with your audience. So I think as long as those things are front and center, you'll remember that personal branding is not about selling a version of yourself, but is more about confidently living your true self and letting that authentically shine by the work that you're destined to do, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it is a challenge, because it's like, what are you doing it for? Because then that changes your perspective completely. Like if you say, well, I want to make money. Well, there's other things that you can do that could be more in the short term that can lead you to making more money, but it won't be true to having values and beliefs in what your life is. Because it's like, I think when you play the long term and you're looking at this from a longevity standpoint, these numbers shouldn't matter. Because if the impact, if for example, with me, empowering others, how do you elevate others? As long as you're doing that one by one and you know the person's name and you know the work that you're doing, that can take, it could take a year to impact 12 people, right? Once a month. And as long as you know the work you're doing, everything else will amplify on its own. But if your intentions are like, yo, I just want to make money, I want to be, use affiliate links to, you know, create a YouTube channel and make the quick bucks, then maybe that approach is not for you. You have to look at something else. Maybe you want to then do the more shady stuff, which is like, you want to buy followers, you want to go down a road where it's just, which is a bad road. I don't recommend it for anyone, but it's like, you just got to know, what are you looking for? And I think the rest can follow.
Some people don't know, but before the show, we send out some questions to guests that they answer. And one of the questions we asked is what you do for hobbies outside of your job. And you said you're very invested in the intricacies of psychology and how neural pathways shape our decision making. How has that hobby and learning about that translated itself into your job and your role as it relates to relationship making with athletes and their partners, and along with building personal branding?
I've always done some sort of side hustle in nightlife. Earlier on in my 20s and 30s, whether I was DJing, I was hosting parties, I did concerts. I've done concerts with like 112, done stuff with Drake too when I was in Detroit. But in nightlife, you know, most people think you come out, you buy some drinks, you know, you maybe you're trying to hook up with somebody, are you there to have a good time with your friends or whatever. But all that engagement that's happening at the bar, that's happening in the DJ booth, that's walking in, once you walk in the bar or club, you know, there's connections there. There's behaviors and patterns that take place. Even the way the dance floor is shaped, I've learned that whether where you put a table at or whether you put a bar at or seating or the DJ influences how people start taking a role into how they're going to dance or walk into the dance floor so they can set it off. So it makes it easier for them to take that action of dancing or connecting. So like with neuroscience, which is what it is, there's an increase in recognizing the valuable tools that can help with my athlete relations roles. One is understanding behaviors, which is the example that I gave with the dance floor, helping understand the underpinning behaviors and let's say how an athlete might respond to stress or how they might respond to competition or how they might respond to collaboration. How does that enhance the communication? An example is like, if I tell you, hey, I want to do the story with you, I think it's going to be so cool. And you say no, but then I say the same thing and be like, I want to do a story with you, I think it'd be so dope. but it's with so-and-so. Now you're thinking, oh, it's a collaborative effort that can enhance my support of what I'm trying to do. So you take a different angle there because now they're seeing another connection that maybe they didn't see, or maybe is like motivating them, right? Like there's understanding and like neurobiases of motivation that whether it's a coach or a manager or having effective ways that you can allow them to focus and remind them that, hey, what's happening now in this moment, everyone's talking about you. You know, I'll give you an example. Joshua Dubs, he's a guy, he's one of my brothers because he also has alopecia and my brother has alopecia. So we have a connection there. So I consider him a friend, but he's hot right now, right? You know, the Vikings, they won a couple of games in a row. And he's one of those stars that we want to do a story with him. And do I go to him now and be like, hey, everyone's wants to do a story, you know, with you and anyone's talking about you, let's do a story. Or do I take a different approach? And what's not being shared on Google or on social or what's being public facing, take a different approach and saying this moment right now is something that you've never seen, you've never experienced before. How do we take that and encapsulate that to the point where like your son is going to read this at some point and you can motivate him? What would you say to your son that you can say through yourself right now in this moment? Because then that makes you think different. Now you're thinking legacy. Now you're thinking longevity, evergreen, right? So using these sort of like neuroscientific insights onto how we process emotion and can foster empathy and enable that to have better relationships between athletes and a media company like ourselves.
That leads me to a very important question, because now with social media and more personal branding being put in the forefront of people who do media, talk about the value of building relationship and not just being in association with someone to get the story told the right way.
It's a hard one, right? Because like you want to be able to make the story less transactional and more transformative. You can't go in there and say, I want to do a story with you because it'll get you great numbers or it'll build your personal brand. It's, you know, I said this before, but it's like, you know, how do you empower that pen? You remember that scene where it was, The Wolf of Wall Street was like, sell me this pen. You guys remember that?
Yep.
And it's like, you know, it's not about the pen. It's not even about like, yes, the story is important. I'll give you an example. We did a story with a WNBA player. She just won a WNBA championship. It was an incredible moment for her. And she talked about her dad. I mean, the story's out. You can see it. It's probably still on our homepage. But I lost my mom about 2 years ago, and she recently had lost her dad. So, like, I was very intrigued and honored, like literally honored, and it was like a privilege to me to be able to have this opportunity to pitch her about talking about this one moment because we had something that connected to us in real life. And it was, to me, when I think about our footprint, and in my case, it's like your digital footprint, what are you leaving behind in this world that you would be remembered for? And it may not have your name directly tied to it. Like, it's her story. But if I played a part in it by allowing her to get her thoughts together, allowing her to build the confidence to share and talk about real life moments that are personal to her, and I created a bridge through our company that allowed her to share her story that then impacted other people. It's like, that's part of the footprint, right? You know, I think about that a lot because my mom passed away. It's like, I think about what was her footprint. I like to celebrate her, right? There was not one woman that someone that was a friend of mine or a guest will come into the house that she's not trying to feed you. She took privilege in trying to, you know, host you and feed you. And that's how I remember her, right? So it's like, whether these are all opportunities for growth. Like, I think relationships are often lead to opportunities, both on a personal and a professional level. But I think it's through the knowledge and experiences and the challenges that really I see these as opportunities for growth, and see them more as transformative versus transactional. I guess if that makes any sense.
I got to know what the DJ name was, Rob.
It was a tribute to Kid and Play back in the day. So I used to go by DJ Rob Play.
Nice.
Hey, well, by the way, too, you know, what's funny about that. You remember in the movie Chucky, you know, the horror film Chucky, you know, he goes, "I'm Chucky. Want to play? Want to play?" So I took that "want to play" and used to use like DJ Raw play. "Want to play? Want to play? Want to play?" It was so cheesy. It was so cheesy, but it worked at the time. And, you know, being able to be in an atmosphere where you're, you know, celebrating responsibly, and being able to control the room and almost be a craft of the art. It's a beautiful thing when you start seeing. I mean, there were some nights that people didn't show up to the party and it was bad weather. And then you out there with four people, you're trying to please them. And you got to figure that out. You know, how do you make a party rock with four people just the same way you would with 400 people? And at the end of it, it's not about the crowd. It's about the individual that you're connecting with and how you know, empowering them to evoke an emotion that's positive. So there's a lot of similarities with nightlife and relationships.
You talked about not focusing on the numbers when it comes to personal branding and storytelling, but that how much of that DJing kind of helped you like figure that out. It's like whether it's four people there or 4,000 people there, you still have to show up and do the, you know, treat it the same.
Yeah, it was consistency. It was consistency. It goes back to that. It's another buzzword, right, that everybody uses. But it was just like, if we have a weekly party on Fridays and you got to show up, whether somebody decides to come through that night or not, it's like you still got to show up. But that consistency time over time, you know, reminds you that, you know, it's great to have numbers because like you got to sustain this, right? You know, you do got to put some importance to that. I'm not saying the hell with the numbers and forget about it. I'm saying that don't let that dictate your creativity is really what I'm saying. Cause numbers do matter. Metrics matter. Like they allow you and data. I always say data tells the best stories. Like if you have 20 pieces of content that you posted and three of them perform well and the other 17 didn't, guess what? There's something to be learned there about what didn't work and about what did work. And then you go back and double down on the things that are working. It may not feel like, you know, sometimes you be like, well, I want to do this way, like an Instagram. People get so obsessed with the grid. Be like, well, I want one of them to be a quote because there's three in a row, right? They all align. One of them to be a quote, one of them mm-hmm. be, you know, a photo of me and the other one to be, you know, a video reel, whatever. But it's like, it shouldn't be about the grid. Like aesthetics do matter to a sense when you're building your personal brand, but it's truly about the impact that you're having. And obviously if somebody's resonated a lot more with the three people or the three videos that perform well and something went well there, it's like, how do I start restructuring to still keep the essence of who I am, but do it in a format that's more appealing because my audience seems to like you got to be able to listen. You talked about doing a survey earlier or taking questions. But success goes beyond these metrics, but you do have to still listen to help you shift and adopt wherever necessary.
It reminds me of the whole, like, the message of how you do one thing is how you do everything. Like, I try to remind myself when I don't want to do something or, like, I don't want to do the dishes. It's like, for me, that's almost my reminder to myself, like, oh, well, how you do one thing is a reflection of how you do everything. And I feel like that's what you meant, you mean when you say, you know, you're playing for an audience of four or 4,000, right? Like you got to put in the work. Do you have any mantras that you like to remind yourself of in those moments?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mantra that the one that I created and I have it on my profile and I mentioned earlier, but it's grow your brand is a constant reminder that it's not necessarily about growing your personal brand per se. It really is about personal development and self-growth. I gave an example, like, not to get too deep here, but it's like I'm the oldest of the boys in my family, of my cousins, and, you know, some of them are back in New York, and a lot of them are struggling. You know, a lot of us are struggling, whether we're living check by check, day to day, you know, going from one job to the other. You know, some of my cousins are in their 40s and still living with their mom, and they're still trying to figure out life. And it's like, you know, and I remind them, it's like, if you continue to do the same thing over and over and you are seeing the results, which goes back to the KPIs, right? Like you're seeing what the output is, then maybe you should consider changing your input and doing something that you're uncomfortable with that would could potentially lead to a different outcome. And usually through getting out of your comfort zone and through this, you know, being comfortable with the uncomfortable conversations, it's what usually leads to growth. I bring this up to my cousins because I tell them about like, yo, I'm a living example of where I had to reprogram my mindset. Like I when I was 18, I moved out of my block because, and this is Washington Heights. I grew up in 192nd and St. Nick, and everyone in my block, in my corner, was either selling drugs or doing something that would have a negative impact or likely have a negative impact in their lives. So I was like, all right, I need to get out of this block because I'm in this box that I can see nothing else in this box. So I have to see something else outside of the box in order to potentially have hope on a different direction, because the numbers are speaking for itself, KPIs. The numbers tell me that four out of my six friends are going to end up locked up or dead. So I took myself out of that equation and put myself in a different scenario that allowed me to see a different light. And it just goes back to anything that we're doing. You know, if it's about life, whether the job you're doing or whether it's like, you know, if you're constantly going home or waking up, going to the job, then going home and watching Netflix for 6 hours or watching ESPN for another 2 hours, and then you eat, chill, go to sleep, and then you expect a different result? Like, nah, you need to be able to make some sacrifices and figure out where that growth is going to take place. And maybe you replace the 3 hours of Netflix with 3 hours of YouTube University that's for free, where you usually, like, whatever you're looking to have a passion towards, which passion is also key too. Passion is something that people get confused about. You know, that's the saying, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. There's true to that, but like discovering that is really hard. So it's like, you can find something that you're passionate about and figure out how to then put countless hours into developing that skill that could then lead to new opportunities that can better your life. But it goes back to, and I say this a lot too, where self-awareness is the first step. If you don't recognize that, you know only what you know. And I'll give another example of another family member. I'm not going to call him out by name. If I say this, what the relationship is, he's going to know I'm talking about him. But he's constantly doing the same thing every time. And I told him, bro, you have to become the person you want to be. And you're not doing that by doing the same thing you're doing right now. So there's a lot of influence we get from media. There's a lot of influence we get from the people that we surround ourselves with. There's a lot of influence we get from just traditional family values and culture that we think it is what it is. Like in my culture, being overweight is a good thing. You're strong. Oh, look at my big boy. But diabetes and high blood pressure, it's also in my family, and there's a connection there. There's things correlate. Going back to personal branding, a consistent brand that grows with the influence of what you value, and being able to develop and maintain a consistent message and mindset along the way with it, I think will ultimately lead to having the ability to impact the audience that you want and grow in the industry that you're looking to succeed in.
What advice would you give for people who are looking to enhance their personal brand or enhance someone else's personal brand through, you know, social media branding companies or whatever? What advice would you give them to, like, not stop at, like, oh, nothing's happening for 30 days. I'm going to stop and just give up.
Here's the beauty about something that you said, like, you said something, if you're trying something for 30 days and it's not working, how should I not give up? And the beautiful thing about social media, especially a lot of these platforms, they're constantly introducing new features. And that goes back to what we were saying about different signals or the algorithms also changing on a regular basis. So if you're doing the same thing for 30 days, let's say you're posting infographics or you're posting quotes or you're posting pictures of yourselves, and guess what? There's a new feature that's been around for years now, but I'm using that as a hypothetical scenario here. Like, well, have you tried Instagram Live? When was the last time you went on live? You're probably going to say never. Well, there's an opportunity to try something new, get out of your comfort zone to be able to tap into something that it's new. And maybe if it's five people that tune into your live, maybe it's your mom, your cousin, your girlfriend, whatever it is, those five people, right? Now you can record that long form content, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then repurpose that into reels or something else or to shorts, right? Because if you weren't taking the time to do like a 10-minute video for, let's say, maybe you wanted to use it for YouTube, but then you do this Instagram live because it's in the moment, but then that gives you some inventory. Now that gives you content. Oh man, I spent 10 minutes doing content and I haven't been able to take time to do content before. So here's an opportunity to, how do I refine that and be able to share that with the audience that I'm trying to tap into? And now we have even newer tools with AI being in the mix now. So now you can take this 10 minute, or even to save us 30 minutes, you take this 30 minute video where you were just BSing on IG Live, or you just go on a rant. On that rant you went to for 30 minutes, now you could dump that into AI too, and it could give you the best 60 seconds based on the keywords that you're using that it thinks that is the video that can go most likely to go viral. So to make things exciting and make things stimulating for you to keep going, you got to try new things. You got to tap into the new features. You got to do the things that you're currently not doing. You know, another opportunity is collabs. Collabs is a beautiful way to grow that still doesn't get utilized the way it should. And now, you know, Instagram introduced an opportunity where you can allow others, let's say you do a carousel post of 5 posts, and maybe let's say you had a game and you took a couple of pictures, and you can say on that post, hey, who else was on that game? Share your post. So now you can add content from another party that's currently living in your personal feed, and they can add that you approve, they can add to the carousel. So if they were also at the game, like, yo, me too was also at the game. And that's a brand new feature that was not announced not too long ago. So my point is to, like, try new things. You know, there's the typical key steps when it comes to building your brand. You can say, oh, well, you define your brand, you know, have a way to articulate what you stand for. You know, what are your unique value propositions? What makes you different? What is your brand message? Okay, that's pretty obvious. All right, now let's choose the right platform, focusing on who your target audience and where they're most active. You know, that's also pretty, you know, obvious. And so now you talk about creating valuable content. And then you could go on about engaging consistently, engaging with your audience, tapping into conversations on other leaders that are in your field. Let's say if it's, if you're looking to be a host for a show, you go to other people that are hosting the show that have a big audience, and what they're posting on, you can dive in pretty deeply into the comments and share your participation in these active threads. But all these things are fundamental. You know, what are the things that get a little scary? It's, you know, when you try to go with the trends. You know, am I using the right hashtag? Am I participating in the right trend? You know, am I losing my values by participating on this trend? Because now I got to do a TikTok dance that I don't want to do, which you don't have to do the TikTok dance. You can literally, like, if you wanted to participate in a challenge or a trend, you can literally take a video that's a TikTok dance and explain why you won't do this because of who you are. That's you participating still in the trend. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's a lot of things that you have to start analyzing and adopting in order to continually invest in your learning and your growing. And growing your brand.
That's such a great message. I feel like that should be the title of this. You don't have to do the TikTok dance. Like, you don't have to do what everybody else is doing.
But you won't get hired if you don't do the trends.
I mean, that's arguable, right? But you mentioned trying new things and exploring and pushing yourself outside your comfort zone. Is there something you've recently done in the past several months that's new and kind of pushed you outside of your comfort zone?
A TikTok dance.
Oh, you did one. Yeah. You did one, for real.
Is this the one with your kids on Halloween?
Yeah, so it's only because my daughter, she's 6 years old, and this is probably bad parenting that she's already been exposed to TikTok dances. She's always trying to figure out ways to do things with mom and dad, and especially with me. And she loves to dance. And this wasn't about the TikTok moment. This now goes back to, you know, I say grow your brand, growing your life. And part of my life are my kids and the relationships I have with them. And if this is something that evokes an emotion in her where it could bring us closer, and you know what, I could use it for social, or I could just do it and not even post it. But that was a moment where it's like, hey, you want to do something fun? Let's try it. Let's see what that looks like. So now that gives me an opportunity to sort of be the director of my own little mini film and do something with my daughter. And if I share it and people like it, then cool. Because personal branding is about being yourself. And even though my channels are intended for business, you can't do business with without knowing who you're doing business with. So if somebody gets to see me and the relationship that I have with my family, and they can connect in that, you know, oh, I have a daughter too. Oh, you know, whatever that connection is. You could do that, but do it in a genuine way. Like, I wasn't doing it in intent, like, oh, this might get a lot of views, or this might lead to more business. It was just, I want to do something with my daughter, and let me do something creatively that it could be a fun way to share and you know, connect with my audience as well at the same time.
That's funny. I love it. So sometimes do the TikTok dances.
Sometimes. We like to say that no idea is a new idea. And you talked about doing things different. What is some advice that you would give people on like new things to try that could help them stand out, whether it's someone that is looking to do what you do or just someone looking to improve their personal brand?
It all depends on your goals and objectives and what your mission is. Because whether that's something that you're doing to do on the cooking side, or if it's something that you want to start doing book reviews, or if it's something that you're knitting sweaters at home in your mom's basement, it really all depends. The new things should always be inspired. I shouldn't say should always. Could be inspired by the things that you tried and didn't work. So let's say if you feel like something was a home run, like, yo, this is going to be dope. You know, I'm going to talk about unlocking the power of your mind, and I'm going to do it in a way that's cool and like has all this animation and all this other stuff. And, you know, the video didn't hit, you know, not one person cared about it. Which by the way, but like, it's important to me to add this disclaimer, you know, a lot of these platforms are free because we're at the mercy of the algorithm. So just because something didn't hit doesn't mean that it doesn't work. But what you could do is, if it's in that particular platform, if it didn't work, you can also take it, either restructure it in a different way or do it in a way where you can take it to a different platform. So it's like, if something was more visually appealing on Instagram, and I'm talking about unlocking the power of your mind, how can I take that didn't hit and take it to LinkedIn? What is that version of LinkedIn? You ever seen like those memes with the pictures of everyone's picture on Instagram, how they look versus Instagram? LinkedIn versus Twitter. It's different versions of the same thing. So being able to try different things allow you to see the things that didn't work, where you can take it to a different platform or keep it on the same platform, but change your delivery on it. And you can do that by asking questions. You can literally go to your friends and family first, because that's the easiest, and ask them, yo, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Most of this probably be positive. But if you wanted to try something, share it on your stories or go back to Instagram Live, or, you know, take it to a different platform and get questions. Having that transparency of the process when the video ends or when the video is ready to be published, because you are open about the process, people are more likely to support it and engage with it because you talked about it. It was coming. Like, you can talk about it. I don't normally do this, but I'm coming to y'all because I need a little support. You know, I'm trying to talk about unlocking the power of the mind, yet I'm still trying to figure out my own mind. What? How do you think I should do this? I'm just putting this out there to get feedback. And people respond, and you get maybe 3 or 4 people to respond, and you take that constructive criticism and put it into a video that now you shape it. And then on that same video, you say, I want to thank these 3 people because they inspired me to help do this video this way. I hope you guys like it. And if they like it, then you know something's working there. If they don't like it, then you can go back to revisit. You know, that's the cool thing about, you know, having showing up on social media on a daily basis when you're building your brand, is that you get an opportunity to try new things. And there's a lot of new features that are constantly being introduced. So yeah, feedback and not being afraid to try new things using the new features that are constantly being introduced to the world.
What's something that you think creators can take from athletes as far as branding goes?
It's a great question. It's also a hard one to answer because athletes come in with a built-in audience, right? Whether they're in high school, in college, someone was following them because of a talent or skill that they displayed. So they've been having a built-in audience. So the minute that someone decides to jump on Instagram or jump on Twitter or whatever social media platform, they're instantly going to get an audience that was waiting for them to jump on board. So it's like they typically don't start at zero. We all start at zero, don't get me wrong, but they've built a career, whether it's in high school, especially now because of NIL, they're building careers in high school and college that when they go to the pro level, it's a lot easier for them to resonate with their audience because there was something that was built in, but there's something to be learned there, right? I go back to what I said earlier about personal brands are a marathon, not a sprint. That's a personal brand for athletes that they took years of dedication in the gym, putting in the reps, constantly showing up for games, whether they didn't perform well or they did perform well, they were still showing up at the games. So it's like, that's a lesson to be learned from athletes where like they put in 5-10 years of work so then they can see the fruits of their labors and they can see their personal brands flourish. So you can't get discouraged. So you starting off at zero because you want to open up a book club or because you want to start a new cooking show and you have a zero audience, you got to remember those are reps that you're putting in towards your personal brand. Yes, it could be no one's watching it right now, but if your 100th video is going to be 10 times better than your first video. And once you put out 100 videos, even if it might be 5 people watching it at first, and that might increase to 20, 30, or 40, or 50, you're putting in the reps and you start seeing the growth. And even if you get discouraged and you're not seeing the growth and you put in 100 videos, whether it's on YouTube or on Instagram, think about it. It's reps. You went to the gym. So as an athlete, you might not see the result that's being displayed on your profile because the engagements are low or whatever, but it's reps in your head that you get to put in because now you're a much better speaker. Now you have much better presence in front of the camera because you put in those 100 reps. Your first, like I said, your first video is going to be 10 times worse than your 100th video. So learning to put in the reps and the consistency and realizing that this is a marathon, not a sprint, is one of the best things you could start realizing that, you know, these overnight sensations, you know, every overnight sensation that is labeled as that always has a story of putting in reps.
One thing we like to ask our guest is what's probably one of your most favorite projects that you ever worked on?
One is something I'm working on now with my brother. My brother's now retired. His big thing now is like, he's an investor, he's a real estate developer. But one of the things that I love myself personally is just a sense of community. You know, I talked about my life in the night scene, but it was a sense of community there. You know, you show up there every week, you know, the bartenders, you know, the guard, the guy at the door, the people that your regulars that come in, and you build a sense of community. You know, something with Charlie that's been dear to him has been his advocacy around alopecia areata awareness, which is an autoimmune skin condition that he has, that he had at the age of 10, where he started losing his hair. Alopecia is hair loss. So you start losing your hair, you start having these patches in his hair that were dropping. And by the age of 12, it increased to alopecia universalis, which is complete hair loss. No pubes, no eyelashes, nothing, no piece of hair in his body. And, you know, that can be traumatic for any young adult. Basketball was his outlet and that helped him accelerate throughout his career. But he's been an advocate of alopecia professionally since he was a freshman at UConn. We had a partnership with the with the National Alopecia Areata Foundation, NAF. And next year will be 20 years since we've been working with them. But now there's a project that we just launched called Alopecia Community, where we started realizing what was missing in the market. A lot of these nonprofit organizations exist in the alopecia world, where it's about fundraising or research or treatments. And it wasn't about like embracing your alopecia where you can use that as a form of creativity. And, you know, like I said, basketball was this outlet. You know, we've been working on a movie, a documentary called What is Alopecia? It features Joshua Dubs is actually one of them. It features a jiu-jitsu champion, American Ninja, you know, an artist, a mom of two, and using what society might have seen as a challenge and shifting that mindset on how you use that as your outlet of expression and growth. So it's we have that movie, but more importantly, we've actually created a platform that people can join called it's alopecia.community. And we have about 400 members that signed up to it so far. And I'm passionate about it because it's like, you can see the impact. You know, when you see something physically, it gives you more hope and acceleration to want to do more. So now we have this whole world around an ecosystem around this community. What we want to do, like, what would the X-Men version of alopecia look like? You know, if alopecia was a superpower, what would a team of superheroes, and how does that, can we build an IP around it, you know, an intellectual property, and now do comic books and do anime series and do, you know, school books, and how do we can figure out to create more diversity and representation in this space that's currently lacking. So that's something that I'm passionate about, not only because it's close to home and it's him, but it's hair loss in general. Like, you know, I rock a hat a lot, but I'm losing my hair, you know, like most male guys. And alopecia, I don't have alopecia areata to that extreme, but male pattern baldness is called alopecia androgenic. And a lot of men that are losing their hair wear hats or look for treatments or, you know, or shave it off, you know, and for men, you know, baldness is accepted in our society. But what's not talked about enough is these little struggles of, you know, when, you know, this fiber, what's the fiber for hair loss that people put in and they shake it so they could put more fulfilling so it doesn't look like your hair is being lost. Microfibers, I think it's called. So there's a world out there that people are dealing with challenges in life because of their physical appearance, that I'm trying to use the power of self-awareness and using these community platforms and forms of empowerment, whether it's through these characters or just getting the right people involved, these thought leaders like a Joshua Giles, like a Charlie, Jordan Walsh also just got drafted to the NBA. He's with the Boston Celtics in this year's draft class. So there's a lot of, and there's celebrities, there's a congresswoman out in Massachusetts, public figures that no one has taken a prioritization to how do we come together and become stronger. And that's actually our message, Stronger Together. So that's something that I'm super excited about. There's a lot of work to be done, and it's a side hustle for me. You know, my primarily is what I do with the Players Tribune and working with athletes and telling their stories, building their athlete brands. But this is something different, you know, and I talked about my footprint on this world and what happens when I pass away. And that's something that we all guarantee, and unfortunately, knock on wood, are we? but it's like, it makes you think, right? You know, and how do you leave a legacy, whether it's, you know, no one knows about it or everyone knows about it, but the point was that you impacted someone positively and that energy still exists. You know, energy is something that can't be destroyed or created, but it can be transferred. And if I can have a play a role in that, you know, it's it just makes my life more meaningful.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.